The following talk was given by Norm Randolph at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on November 26, 2023. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming today. Talk about Zen practice, and in our practice, we try to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now, as usually people take up practice with the expectation of gaining something, but the true practice is be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now as much as possible. Just be aware here and now without expectations, And without being caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs. But usually we ignore a director in our experience by being caught up in our ideas, beliefs, and expectations. We believe here now reality corresponds to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it. And we live our lives based on those ideas and beliefs rather than living our lives based on being aware here and now. So in our practice, we allow our expectations and egocentric beliefs and ideas to naturally drop away by themselves and continually resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Moment after moment, see and let go of how here and now reality is ignored and fully live here and now reality. Be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Eventually, can be seen that here and now reality could not correspond to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it. There's nothing to expect outside of here now reality. Ultimately, here now reality is an all-inclusive reality. This all-inclusive here now reality is our true life. We're not lacking anything. We don't need to practice with the expectation we're going to get something that we're lacking. Don't lack anything. So as much as possible, just be aware here and now in all circumstances. As much as possible, try to do this. The most stable and peaceful form of this practice is practice of Zazen. This practice is not limited to the practice of Zazen sitting meditation. So we try to carry out this practice in all our activities and in all situations as much as possible. Usually when people start Zen practice, they're caught up in countless ideas and beliefs about themselves, others, and the nature of reality. And they have lots of expectations of improvement and gain. They think that their practice will enable them to gain states of health and happiness and relaxation and enable them to get rid of things they don't like about themselves. They think they'll be able to get rid of greed, anger, and fear. And they think that they'll gain these wonderful states of peace, freedom, enlightenment, and wisdom. So people practice with these expectations, thinking, if I practice Zazen, I will get these wonderful situations, these wonderful states. And people wonder, how long is it going to be before I get these improvements, before I gain these wonderful benefits that I expect to get from doing Zazen? People wonder, what will it be like when I do make these improvements and gains? But we don't need to worry about that. These states are inseparable from our life here and now. Practice with expectations is really not true practice. And so practice, just be aware here and now without expectations, without holding to our ideas and beliefs. My teacher, Katagiri Roshi, was one time asked by a student. The student said, if I sit Zazen, will enlightenment come to me? Katagiri Roshi said, no, even if you sit Zazen, enlightenment will not come to you. This person was thinking that he was lacking something called enlightenment, and he was needed this technique to get enlightenment so that this enlightenment would come to him. He didn't have it now, but if he practiced Zazen, then it would come to him. And this, I knew a person who had been practicing very hard for a number of years, and she had this expectation also. She'd been practicing for about 5 years, but she was getting really discouraged because, as she said, nothing comes. She kept waiting for something wonderful to come to her. But as she said with great anguish in her voice, nothing comes. So even though she'd been a very serious practitioner for a number of years, finally she gave up. She kept waiting for something to come to her, but as she said in a very sad voice, nothing comes. But shortly after my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, got here to Minnesota, we had a visiting teacher at the Minnesota Zen Meditation Center. This was a teacher from another tradition. And this teacher said, Katagiri Roshi is a very nice person. He doesn't need to sit Zazen because he's already enlightened. But he sits Zazen to help you who are not enlightened. He's enlightened. He doesn't need to sit anymore. But he wants to help you who are not enlightened. He wants to keep you company till you realize enlightenment. But once again, this person from another Buddhist tradition was thinking that Zen practice was a technique to get something that you were lacking. And Katagiri Roshi was very kind-hearted. He would generously sit Zazen with all of us unenlightened people just to keep us company until we realized enlightenment. So for this person, enlightenment was, or Zazen was a practice that was a technique to get something that we were lacking. And Katagiri Roshi was a very tactful person. He didn't correct this person, or, you know, he was a guest speaker and he didn't say anything at the time. But later on, several weeks later, the person wasn't there. He said to all of us, that's not the right idea about Zazen. Zazen is not a technique to get enlightenment. Zazen is to live the enlightenment that is your life right now. And I remember one time Katagiri Roshi was asked, this was another teacher, and this teacher was asked, how long do I have to practice? The person who asked the question was saying, how long do I have to practice before I get peace, freedom, enlightenment, and wisdom? How long is it going to take me to get these? And the teacher answered, he said, until you die. And that wasn't the answer the student was hoping for. He was hoping a teacher would say, oh, you know, do a couple of years, I know how to do it. I know how to do the trick for you. But this teacher said, until you die. And Katagiri Roshi was asked this same question. He was asked, how long must we practice? And Katagiri Roshi said, life after life, forever. And then the student said, what do you mean by forever? And Katagiri Roshi said, at least 3,000 kalpas. And I'll explain what the kalpa is. A kalpa is an unfathomably long length of time. There are several examples of how long the kalpa is. One of them is imagine this huge iron, or not iron block, but a granite block, 40 miles on a side. And once every 100 years, a celestial maiden comes down from heaven wearing a celestial garment, a diaphanous silk celestial garment, and she allows her garment to gently just drape over a section of the giant granite block. And by the time this giant granite block is worn down to a fine powder, that's one kalpa. We can see it's an unfathomably long length of time. And then there's another example of what the kalpa is. This one involves a huge field filled with poppy seeds, 40 miles on a side. And poppy seeds about as big as the head of a pin. It's just filled with poppy seeds. And once every 100 years, a celestial gentleman comes down and plucks one poppy seed from the field. And this celestial gentleman is wearing celestial overalls he's working in a field, so he needs to wear overalls. And he plucks one poppy seed every 100 years. And when that field is completely empty of poppy seeds, this huge field 40 miles on a side, that is one kalpa. So kalpa is an unfathomably long length of time. You can't conceptually grasp how long a kalpa is. But when Katagiri Roshi was asked, how long must we practice? He said, life after life, forever. And then the student said, what do you mean by forever? And then Katagiri Roshi said, at least 3,000 kalpas. And I was listening to this. I said, my goodness, that just seems terrible. 3,000 kalpas. I mean, one kalpa seems bad enough. 3,000 of them, my goodness. But Katagiri Roshi is trying to let us know it's not a matter of how long we have to do to carry out this practice. The practice is to live this reality, which is boundless temporally, boundless spatially. 3,000 kalpas is right here now. 100 million billion kalpas is right here now. However big a number of kalpas is right here now, this reality of here and now, which is our true life, is always here and now. So our practice isn't to sit around wondering how long it's going to take to get benefit from this practice. Our practice is to just settle into this practice and live this all-inclusive temporally, all-inclusive spatially reality that's here and now. Sometimes people, when they start out in Zen practice, they want to, they hope that they'll accomplish these wonderful attainments, attaining enlightenment, peace, freedom, and wisdom. And they think if my friends found out that I had attained those states, they would have a very high opinion of me. And then that person might start thinking about, my high school reunion is coming up pretty soon. It sure would be nice if I could go to my high school reunion. as an enlightened man, that would really make a good impression on my friends. And my friends would say, well, you know, I'll just use myself as an example. They might say, you know, Norm is such a loser back in high school, but look at him now. He's a fully enlightened man. This really is very impressive. Imagine that Norm, the total loser back in high school, becoming a fully enlightened man. And sometimes people think that through this practice of Zazen, they can gain special powers, psychic powers, such as the ability to walk on water and the ability to levitate. And I might think, well, gosh, it'll be so wonderful when I go to my high school reunion and as a fully enlightened man, and I can demonstrate my powers of levitation and my ability to walk on water, and people will be very impressed that this total loser, Norm, could attain such wonderful states. But we don't need to spend our time thinking in such a way. In this practice of here now awareness, it can be realized that here now reality is not something that can be pinned down. Can't pin it down objectively, can't pin it down conceptually. Not something that can be pinned down. This here now reality is a reality where things are not as they seem, nor are they otherwise. It seems like it's a reality that consists of separate things that persist through time and move through space and interact with other separate things to cause other separate things to appear and other separate events to take place. It seems like this is the reality we're living in, and conventionally it seems that way. Eventually it can be realized that we can't actually find separate things. You know, reality shows up with the appearance of separate things, but can't actually find separate things. It becomes evident that reality is empty of separately existing, persisting, substantial things. But yet this reality that is empty of separately existing, persisting, substantial things shows up as a reality that looks like separate, persisting, substantial things. Reality is not as it seems, nor is it otherwise. We can't pin down how it is. We can't say it's a reality where it's all emptiness. We can't pin down and say it's a reality of separate, persisting things. We can't hold to the idea of oneness. We can't hold to the idea of separation. Can't hold to the idea of unity. We can't hold to the idea of multiplicity. Whatever idea we try to describe reality with, we can't really describe it. So whatever is said about here now reality doesn't completely say it. It isn't something that can be described conceptually. But it's important that we don't throw out ideas either. Ideas are very important. Ideas, concepts, explanations, and descriptions, they're very important. We need them. They help us to function in this reality, which seems to be a divided up, dualistically structured reality. It's very helpful for us to be able to use concepts and ideas to help us function in this seemingly dualistically structured reality. And it's also, these ideas are very helpful in pointers that teachers use to give us suggestions in our investigation of direct here now experience. So my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, used to say, whatever you say doesn't completely say it, but you have to say something. You have to use concepts, words, ideas, explanations and descriptions to point to what this reality is. They help us to function in our everyday life and to help us to realize and give us suggestions in our investigation of direct here now experience. And Steve Hagen had a very interesting teaching that was along these lines, a very helpful teaching, I thought. Zen teaching is like writing on a blackboard. You write something on the blackboard for the students to see, but you don't want the student to cling to that thing that you've written. So eventually, the teacher erases what is written on the blackboard. He may say something else that may be similar, or it may be contradictory from what he first wrote down. But anyway, he doesn't want the student to attach to what being presented. But he has to say something. He has to give us a suggestion to help us in our investigation of direct here now experience. So he says something else. And then he may leave that up for a while, or he may not. He may end up saying something contradictory to that. Or he may say something that reinforces that. You know, he's constantly pointing in different ways, trying to help people realize what their life is, giving them suggestions. It helps them in their practice of investigating direct here now experience, and giving them suggestions on how to take care of their life, which is not as it seems, nor is it otherwise. So I thought this is a very good teaching of Steve's. And it teaches us not to grasp the ideas that are offered in teaching. Just see them as pointers, see them as suggestions, to give us suggestions how to live our life and to realize what our life is. My teacher, Katagiri Roshi, used to say, if the student thinks that he or she has something or has gotten something, it's the teacher's job to show them that this is not the case. This practice is not about trying to get something and attaching to something and believing, yes, I got it. I got enlightenment. I got peace, freedom, and wisdom. I got the right idea. I got the right conceptual explanation about how reality is. Katagiri Roshi said, don't do that. Don't do that. Just let go of what you think you've gotten and really tune into your life as it is, beyond the idea of what you've gotten or what you've not gotten, beyond any ideas at all. The Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi was famous for starting the San Francisco Zen Center, and who is famous for writing the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. He said, you cannot have attachments. When people hear that, they say, my goodness, that doesn't sound right, because I have all sorts of attachments. You know, it doesn't seem right to say you cannot have attachments. But eventually it can be realized you cannot have attachments. No, this is a reality where you can't find separate beings who could attach, and you can't find separate individual things and phenomena to attach to. So you can't have attachments. But yet we're living in this reality where it seems like we're attaching to things, and I can attach to this and get away from that. And, you know, we need to pay attention to how things seem, but not get caught by the idea of how things seem. And we need to realize how things are beyond seeming appearances, but without being caught by the ideas of how things are beyond seeming appearances. Our practice is to let go of When we think we can attach, when we think we can get something, and we proudly, when we proudly say, I did it, I got in life. That's what kind of Guru Rishi would be doing. But his hands like, I did it, I got in life. So when you find yourself doing that, let go. Don't do that. So a lot of everything I'm saying is, I don't want anybody to believe it. Just see it as a pointer. Just see it as a suggestion. Maybe it might be helpful. It might not. Just see helpful suggestion. I hope they're helpful. That might give you ideas about how to live your life and give you ideas about what your life is, or help you realize directly what your life is. So in the practice of awareness here and now, can you realize that your now reality is a reality of wholeness, totality, universal reality, beyond the ideas of wholeness, totality, and universal reality. Ultimately, it's undivided, yet it manifests with the appearance of all these divisions and separations. Your now reality is a formless, boundless, beginningless, endless reality in which no separate things can be found, but yet which shows up as looks like all these separate things. The seemingly separate thing or being is a manifestation of just directly experienced your now reality. Your now reality can't be objectified or explained, yet it can't be hidden. There's nothing separate from it that could hide it, and everything is a manifestation of it, and it's being directly experienced now. Right now, we're experiencing totality, wholeness, universal reality. It's right now. We're already experiencing. We just, because we're so caught up in our ideas, we don't realize it. Already directly known. And don't try to figure this out. This is another way we fall into confusion. We Kadagira Roshi used to say, we're always playing juggling our ideas, trying to figure out what our life is, what our practice is, trying to figure out this and that. But you can't figure it out completely. But still, we can, conventionally speaking, there are things we need to figure out. We need to figure out how to pay our taxes and how to get a good rate on our mortgage. You know, some things we need to, I'm not saying never try to figure anything out, but see, don't get caught by thinking you can figure out this boundless reality or what your true life is. In the practice of here now awareness, we can see that we are inseparable from all beings. Everything you meet is your own life in the sense that you are inseparable from it. Our true life is the life of all beings, and we try to take care of ourselves and all beings with compassion. All beings are influencing each being, and each being is influencing all beings. Here and now reality is a reality in which all beings are mutually influencing each other and enabling all beings to be as they are. To help all beings is to fully participate in and live this here and now reality where all beings are mutually influencing and helping each other. To fully participate in and live this here and now reality is to help all beings and to be helped by all beings. These are all just pointers. Don't grasp any idea of this. In the practice of here now awareness, we can see and let go of how here now reality is ignored and fully live here now reality. This directly experienced here now reality is our true life, our true self, our true nature. Don't grasp an idea of it, just let yourself see it directly. Let yourself let go of how you ignore this reality and directly realize it, rather than trying to figure out and come up with ideas about what it is. When we first start out in this practice, we usually think that I, separate ego self, me, should be aware. But eventually it can be directly realized that our practice is to just be aware without being caught up in our ideas of awareness, or without being caught up in our ideas of I, who am I, and what is this awareness? Just directly realize what this is. Eventually our true life, eventually can be realized, our true life, our true self, our true nature is an all-inclusive awareness here and now. This is sometimes called Buddha nature. It's a technical Buddhist term. Yeah, it's this all-inclusive awareness is here and now is Buddha nature. And everything is a manifestation of this Buddha nature. My teacher, Katagiri Roshi, used to say, you are Buddha, all beings are Buddha. All beings are Buddha in the sense that they're manifestations of this Buddha nature. But realize this directly. Don't take hold of some idea and say, ah, yes, I'm Buddha because my true nature is the Buddha nature. That's a great, great idea. I'm going to stick with that. So this is not an idea to be grasped. This idea, you are Buddha, all beings are Buddha. This is a pointer to help us realize this directly experienced reality and realize how to live it. The practice is to fully, wholeheartedly live this awareness here and now. This practice helps ourselves and all beings. In this practice, we try to help all the seemingly separate beings without being caught by the belief that they are separate beings. And in this practice, we try to take care of this reality where all beings are living one inseparable life without being caught by an idea of oneness. And we, in our everyday life, we use words, concepts, descriptions, language, without being caught by the belief that reality can actually be described by these words, concepts, and language. This practice is to fully live as we are without being caught up in our ideas and beliefs, without being caught up in our expectations for gain and improvement. And I'd like to return to this book. It's called Seeds for a Boundless Life by Blanche Hartman. I very much like her teachings. She was a teacher at one of the teachers at San Francisco Zen Center. She was a disciple of Shunryu Suzuki. And she went on to become a very helpful and wonderful teacher at the San Francisco Zen Center. And she died at about, I think maybe 7, 8 years ago. But fortunately, she had some of her teachings written up, and I'd like to read a few of them here. I like the way she presents things, and She says, I don't know about you, but when I started to sit Zazen, I really began to see how many fixed ideas and fixed views I had, how much judgment was already right on the tip of my tongue, how much expectation, how much preconception I was carrying around with me all the time, and how much it got in the way of actually noticing what was happening. I don't want to tell you that after all these years, I'm free of all that, but at least I notice it sooner, and I sometimes don't get caught up in believing it. First, before you can let go of preconceptions and expectations and prejudices, you have to notice them. Otherwise, they're just carrying on unconsciously and affecting everything you do. But as you carry out the Zen practice, you begin to recognize the really persistent ones. And you might say, oh my gosh, you again. Didn't I just deal with you yesterday? And again, and again. Pretty soon you can't take them seriously. They just keep popping up and popping up and popping up. And after a while, you become really familiar with them. And you can't get so buried under them once you realize that it's just a habitual state of mind and doesn't have much to do with what's right here now. It's just something you haul around with you all the time and bring out for every occasion. It hasn't much to do with the present situation. Sometimes you can actually say, oh, I think I'm just hauling that around with me. I don't think it has anything to do with this. Our effort is to meet whatever shows up without expectation, prejudice, or preconceptions. Once we notice the fixed views that we're carrying around with us, the preconceptions that we're carrying around with us, then it's possible for us to let them go and appreciate our life freshly as it is. A couple more I wanted to read. I like the way she says this. We practice for the sake of practice, just to express and actualize our intrinsic Buddha nature for the benefit of all beings. There is nothing we need to get that is not already right here, right now, in this very body and mind as it is. To seek something other than just this implies that something is missing, that we are not complete somehow. The first time I heard Suzuki Roshi speak, he said, you are perfect just as you are. And I thought, he doesn't know me. I'm new here. But again and again, he would keep pointing in that direction, saying, you have everything you need. You are already complete. Just to be alive is enough. I finally had to assume that I was not the sole exception to his assertions, but I was still dubious. And as I continued to practice and to talk with other Zen students, I found that many people share the conditioning that leads us to think that there's something wrong with us. If we could only get, do, or be something more, then we would be all right. It's so easy for us to get the idea that there's something wrong with us, and it's so hard to let go of that and just appreciate our life as it is. When you meet your life as it is and realize just this is enough, or are you always looking for something more? That's where suffering comes in. This isn't enough. I need something more. Then it always feels as if something were lacking. How can we meet our life as it is wholeheartedly, just like this? This is what our practice is. Suzuki Roshi used to say, see everyone as Buddha. See each being as Buddha. See yourself as Buddha. And if we're all Buddha, if we're all inseparable and interconnected like that, then an all-encompassing love has to be our experience. Blanche says, living a life of gratitude has really changed my life. I used to be both quite opinionated and quite ready to criticize anyone who didn't agree with me. We all support each other. I used to criticize anyone who didn't agree with me. Now I recognize that my life depends on all the lives around me. We all support each other. None of us could take care of ourselves in a world all alone. We're so completely interwoven and interdependent. Our life depends on one another. And as you begin to realize that, you can't help but be grateful. Do you have any questions you would like to ask?
Oh, sorry.
Should just say hi.
Oh.
Yeah, good to see them. Good to see you. How's Bella? Good? Yeah. She has a very kind looking face. That's her dog, Bella. Wonderful. Wonderful looking dog. Well, if there are no questions, then maybe I'll just wrap it up. Anyway, thank you all for coming.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.